Welcome into episode 239 of the Source to Say podcast, your go-to Kentucky basketball and recruiting podcast on the growing KSR podcast network. Source to Say is, as always, presented by our good friends at Justice Dental. Visit one of their two Lexington locations. That's on Blazer Parkway and Wellington Way by scheduling an appointment online at justicedental.com or by calling 859-543-0700. You can even send a text message to one of their friendly team members at the same number to ask a question or make an appointment. Now is a great time to schedule your dental cleaning. Dr. Thompson, Dr. Justice, and their team strive to provide you with good oral health and a comfortable environment. Justice Dental team looks forward to seeing you soon. I am your host, Jack Pilgrim of Kentucky Sports Radio. Very happy to be joined once again by Sean Smith of Go Big Blue Country. Sean, how the heck are you?
I'm fantastic, Jack. How are you?
Oh, I am living the dream. We have a sweep on our hands for the first time since 2011-2012. The Kentucky Wildcats have beaten the Tennessee Volunteers in back-to-back performances, both at home and away. An unbelievable effort after just what a difference a week makes, Sean. We were sitting here a week ago saying this team's out of the NCAA tournament. There's no way that we can be optimistic about this. They're not cohesive. They're not playing together as a team. And I don't know how we can even look at postseason play as a realistic option at this point. And now, 1 week later, here we are talking about quad one wins. They now have four on the year. And here we are, four games left in the regular season, and all things are looking up.
Yeah, I didn't get to talk about the Mississippi State win, but after Georgia, I even tweeted how it kind of felt like we were nearing the end of, you know, John Calipari at Kentucky if things didn't shift and change drastically, because at that point they were out of the NCAA tournament. And honestly, Jack, I didn't have much hope that they were going to play their way back in. And they get in to me, if you had told us, a month ago that the team that they would sweep in the league would be Tennessee, I probably would have said there's no way. I said maybe a win at Rupp Arena and a loss in Knoxville, but they go out and they controlled both games, really. Especially this last one, a really impressive win on the heels of the win versus Mississippi State. Then they pick up some help from Texas A&M as well. And you're starting to put together something that we have not been able to talk about, and that's an NCAA tournament resume, and there's still more opportunities. So it was a huge win, huge step in the right direction. A lot of guys played well, and got some guys really stepping into roles and making differences, especially this week.
And I do want to make it clear that the pessimism was justified. Like, I know it's easy to look back and, you know, in hindsight and go, oh, look how ridiculous these morons sounded. Like, a week ago, we were waking up saying this team is 1-7 in quad one games. And where were those wins coming from? Cal was talking to the podium about, we have all these quad opportunities to close out the regular season, and there are plenty of chances to get right the ship. Oscar Tshiebwe was talking about the team's fight, and if we just show some fight, then we'll be able to finish the year with a special season. We know that this is a special team, this and that. But with six regular season games to go, they were 1-7 in quad one games. They had a quad four loss at home against South Carolina. Where was that optimism coming from? They did have the opportunities, but why did you think that it was going to magically get fixed in those last six games? And to their credit, they did go on the road at Starkville, and as you said, controlled that one. Should have beaten them by more. I mean, they were up by 13 with 10 minutes to go. That should have been a bigger statement win, but they still played well, all things considered. And then you go and make a statement at home against Tennessee for that sweep, and get back-to-back quad one wins. You're now at 4-7 in quad one opportunities, because that Texas A&M game slipped into quad one territory, and now you win at Florida against Auburn at home and Arkansas on the road, and you're 500 in quad one opportunities.
Opportunities in the SEC tournament too. Is this going to be a team? Like, I don't want to get too far ahead of us, but is this going to be a team at one point that, like you said, was 1-7 in quad one, and then we're going to look up here in a few weeks, and are they going to be above 500 in quad one? I mean, that's the thing, though. They had opportunities. They had let a lot of really good opportunities slip away. Arkansas at Rupp Arena, you had Kansas at Rupp Arena. There were so many of those games that would have shifted this sooner than what it has shifted, and they just couldn't get it. But then what do we talk about every single season? You want to be playing your best basketball late, and it's getting late. Got a couple of weeks left. They've had a lot of close wins. I thought the most impressive thing about Saturday to me is, Tennessee walked into Rupp Arena wanting some revenge for that loss a month ago. and Kentucky never even allowed it to really have an opportunity. Like that first half, it was ugly early, but Kentucky held Tennessee in check. Kentucky continued to score. It's a team that is becoming more efficient offensively over the course of the last month, which is something, honestly, I think that's probably another thing that surprised me is how efficient they've been on that end of the floor, because we had a lot of criticism for the way that they were running offense early in the year. Defensively, they still have some things, I think, to fix, but they're getting better there as well. And I think it's a team that's trending in the right direction, playing shorthanded, playing guys a lot of minutes. Kaysen didn't have a good game at Georgia a week ago. Huge games, and a huge game against Tennessee that really put Kentucky a step in the right direction.
Yeah, you put it best. They're shorthanded down C.J. Frederick and Xavier Wheeler, but in his place, Kaysen Wallace goes 16 points, 6 assists, 6 rebounds, one steal, 3 turnovers in 39 minutes. And Chris Livingston, really the star of the show the last week, he wins SEC Freshman of the Week. He goes for 12 points, 10 rebounds, 4 of 5 shooting. He misses 4 free throws in the second half. Really the only kind of flaw about his performance, and then he had a strong outing in Starkville as well. John Calipari's best teams have his blue chip freshmen playing their best basketball by the end of the year. And now, as you're seeing with this team, Chris Livingston's finally finding his groove. Kaysen Wallace is a playmaker, is emerging as the guy that we kind of knew that he could be once the keys were handed to him. It was about, all right, dude, you got to do this you have the opportunity now. And now it's on you to take advantage of it. And he has absolutely done that. I think he's been brilliant as a playmaker, as a distributor, as a facilitator. He's been just phenomenal in the pick and roll. Him and Oscar have really found some momentum and some rhythm there. And I think those two together, Kaysen and Chris Livingston, I think we could see Kentucky run everything through them and kind of be a freshman-driven team in March Madness. And that's exactly how John Calipari's team should be at this time of the year.
It, absolutely. And he hit some tough shots, Kaysen did, especially in the first half there, some pull-up jumpers. And then the and-one there early in the second half, and you saw the emotion from him. And you know, that's something we talked about all season. At some point, he was going to be handed the keys. I think it happened sooner than maybe what we expected, given the injuries and things that Xavier has dealt with this year. But it forced Kaysen into that role. And at times, I think he didn't look too comfortable in it, but he is starting to get very comfortable in that star role for Kentucky. And I thought the execution and stuff that John Calipari and the coaching staff come up with posting him on some plays, on some of Tennessee's smaller guards, especially Zakai Ziegler. I thought that was a really good wrinkle that Kentucky added for this game. And the way the physicality that Kaysen plays with and inside 4 or 5 feet, I thought that was a really good adjustment, paying attention to the scouting report, and really got Kentucky going at times as well. And I mean, it's a huge win, Jack. I mean, this is a big step in the right direction. They're receiving votes in polls now, something that I didn't know if they would ever get back to this year, and here they are. I mean, this is a team now that you don't want to say the way they are in the SEC standings, it would take they'd have to fall completely apart, in my opinion, the next couple of weeks to play their way out. They played their way in. Now it's about improving some seeding. Like, how high can you go? Like, you're starting to see nines and things like that. And a few weeks ago, it was an 11. And I mean, you can play your way up the seeding chart, but the way you're looking at this now is just continue to play good basketball, continue to find ways to win, get healthy. We know they're going to need those two guys. The depth is what's my biggest concern, is do these guys get really tired down the stretch here playing a ton of minutes because they need those other two backcourt pieces. I mean, there's some lineups you got to see created the other day. What was one guard with Jacob Toppin and Chris Livingston, and like it was the lineups that we were looking at like months ago saying, just barf, like, please don't show me this. But he had no option but to play them. And so credit to the coaching staff. I thought it was a great job all the way around.
So I guess I'll just put it out there, you know, what I'm hearing about the injuries and when we're expected to get guys back. I still am hearing that the expectation is that C.J. Frederick is supposed to be returned to practice this week, and then he will be out at Florida, and then very likely to return at home against Auburn. So to get that guy back at minimum to just get spacing back where it needs to be, add another shooter to the floor, I think that's going to be a huge help for, you know, just helping things run a little bit better, not be some one-dimensional and not kind of put you in a pickle like you saw. I think that lineup was at one point, Kaysen, Chris Livingston, Jacob Toppin at the three. was it Damian Collins at the four?
Yeah.
Oscar the five?
Yeah, I believe so. And it was like, God, how long can you make this work? But it worked.
Good thing we don't need to figure that out for very much longer. So CJ is expected back next week or this coming weekend, which is going to be huge for spacing and things like that. Xavier is still a little bit more of a question mark. Here's the deal with Xavier. And I know all the rumors going on. You know, he's quit the team. He's not wanting to be a part of this anymore. You know, all those things. I'm told all that's not true, or he's suspended. None of that. Like, definitely not the case. Somebody, you know, I was told that had he been kicked off the team, or he was suspended, or he was being some type of locker room disruption, he would have been sent home. Like, Cal doesn't have this, you know, letting disgruntled guys ruin his locker room, especially like leading up to March. So he's not suspended. He's not disgruntled, all those things. But I will say there isn't a rush for a guy who comes back to play 9, 10, 12 minutes, you know, on him personally. You know, John, Sean, if you were in his shoes and you knew that you were going to be rushing back to the floor on a high ankle sprain, knowing that it's Kaysen's team, the freshmen are playing well, everything's kind of working together pretty well right now, do you really want to thrust yourself in there and, you know, rush yourself back to play 8 minutes?
No.
So that's the predicament that Xavier is in right now, that yes, his goal is to play this season, and he does. You know, this is a real injury, and the plan is for him to return at some point. And I was told that it was supposed to be during the regular season, before postseason play, you know, at least get him back to get playing where he needs to in postseason play. But if you think about it, you know, risk reward, why is he going to overdo it initially for the reward of playing 7-8 minutes with Kaysen playing 38? So I think that when there's more of a happy medium where he is well enough to come back and play 15-17 minutes, I think that's when we see him play. So I think it won't be immediately. I think it probably won't be the next game or two, but I think the goal is to get him back by the end of the regular season and definitely in time for postseason play. So that's all that matters. You got to get both of them back by the time March Madness rolls around. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the goal and the expectation right now.
Yep, you need the depth. That's the biggest thing. You need depth, especially in the backcourt. You can't afford another injury at that spot. I mean, regardless of who it's to. I mean, even you couldn't afford one right now to a Duthiero. I mean, you need every single capable body on this roster to kind of push your way into SEC tournament play and NCAA tournament play. But you made a point there a minute ago talking about the freshmen. And I think – I can't remember which episode it was. It might have been after the loss to Alabama that I was talking about the freshmen. And that the biggest thing that I wanted to see was you're talking – we were talking about all these older players that they have, these guys that they've got from the portal. Oscar Tshiebwe is who he is at this point. You know, Xavier is who he is, C.J. Frederick. But the freshmen were the two that had the most development in them and kind of star potential. You're seeing that now, right? You're seeing Kaysen emerge and take over as that lead guard. You're seeing Chris Livingston, who I think his emergence in recent games is probably the biggest takeaway for me. I thought he was dominant on the glass Saturday and was a warrior, honestly. That's what I would describe him as, and made a lot of tough plays. Those two kind of stepping forward and playing those key roles, those are some of the best John Calipari teams, is when the freshmen lead. And then you see the other pieces, the other veteran pieces kind of chip in and do their thing. So I think that might be the biggest shift, is their freshmen are becoming stars and difference makers. And I think that's the big key to success here as you get closer to the NCAA tournament, because those two are going to continue to get better and better, where some other guys I think have actually capped at this point in their career. They're still good players, but those two are still oozing with tons of potential and can add to that over the course of the next 4 weeks.
And I like that development can't be understated, because a month ago, like, I'm here to tell you guys, Chris had his bags packed, ready to hit the portal by the second the season ended. Things were not very good. Like, and he, I mean, just this out, this past game after the Tennessee win, he said very publicly, said, I'm here to tell you that I was not happy-go-lucky personality. Like, I was pissed off, and he should have been. Like, When you are a guy like Chris Livingston, you're the 2022 Gatorade Virginia Player of the Year. You average 38, 17, 10, you know, whatever his stats were as a junior. He has always been the guy. As a senior at Oak Hill, a prestigious school, playing under Steve Smith, who's a Hall of Fame, one of the greatest high school coaches ever, when he's finding success and elite success at both of those stops, you expect to come in and be immediate, you know, that immediate difference maker at the collegiate level. And when you are watching your team struggle while you're sitting on the bench, knowing who you were in high school, of course you're going to be disgruntled. Of course you're going to be discontent and, you know, kind of be sitting there and going, what the hell, man? Like, I am who I am. I dominated in high school. I took games over by myself. Why don't you let me do that? Why can't I be that guy on this team? And there was kind of that, you know, pushback on Kentucky's end where it's like, buddy, you're not ready yet. You haven't developed to the point of getting there. So it was kind of an accountability thing for both sides, where Chris kind of needed to accept the role that maybe it wasn't going to be as a primary ball handler, jack up 15 shots a game and be the guy, but, you know, still have on Kentucky's end, expand his role, let him play through some of those mistakes that he wasn't getting before, and kind of finding that happy medium. And I think both sides have found that. And I think that's why we've seen this breakthrough. And I do. And there are a couple questions in here about, you know, what the chances are of him hitting the portal, what time, you know, if he comes back or what his draft status is. There was one, yeah, said, is Chris's recent play good enough for him to play himself into the draft and his clutch backing, or is Kyle Tucker right about his chance that he comes back? Yeah, I do think that the chances of him coming back are exponentially higher than they were. Like, it was a 100% lock a month ago that he was not coming back to this Kentucky team. I think that both sides have looked at themselves in the mirror, and I think we have had a very real breakthrough in terms of production, but also, you know, personally, by themselves, of what the other needs out of the other. So I do think that the chances of him coming back, or at least, you know, not hitting the portal, are exponentially higher. I still think there's a lot of work to be done, and I think there's a lot of season left to go for things to kind of go south again. So don't just pencil him in back for next season. I also wouldn't be shocked if he continues to develop that he does go pro, because that was his dream going into this, is to be a one and done. He's, you know, dreams of being LeBron James, signed with Clutch. You know, he wanted to be that one and done instant impact guy. And if he plays himself into contention, Sean, I wouldn't be shocked to see Chris go, but we're at least back in comfort zone of, it's not the lock that it was a month ago, that we can at least kind of start talking about him coming back. But more so, forget about next year and what he does. His presence on this team and the impact that he can make on this team is bigger than any of that. So the on-court breakthrough is the biggest part of all this.
Yeah, and you started to see it little by little in spurts. Like early in the Kansas game, I thought he had a really good moments. And then, you know, it didn't play a ton of minutes the rest of the way. And then that wasn't the only time that happened. But this is where you don't want to take positives from being shorthanded. But then again, like, if CJ and Sabir hadn't missed some time, would we be seeing the emergence of Chris? Would he been able to play the same amount of minutes that he's been called upon to play in recent games and in recent weeks? Would we be seeing the emergence of some of the other guys on this roster, but forcing them to play significant minutes and being called upon to let guys, honestly, here's the big thing with Cal, play through some mistakes might have been one of the most key important things that have happened in recent weeks. And then you get these other guys back healthy, and now you've got multiple guys with confidence playing well. You can work those two back in. We both know that CJ Frederick and Xavier Wheeler will have roles on this team that are important, especially CJ. They need another guy that can make shots, especially wide open shots. But another guy that stands out to me too, and it showed up in my Facebook memories today, and I shared it. You and I 2 years ago talked about Jacob Toppin being an important long-term piece of this program. And at times it's kind of been like, you know, is Jacob ever going to scratch that surface of the potential that we talked about during the COVID season? Jack, 10 straight games in double figures, quietly playing some of the best basketball of his career. And I thought he made some really athletic plays and finishes near the rim the other day and doing some good things. And you pair him with what you're getting out of Chris in that 3-4 spot, whatever they're playing at the time, is starting to become a stronger piece to this roster that maybe we didn't see a month ago.
Yeah, his breakthrough has been huge and absolutely crucial for this team. And we talked basically every time Kentucky has struggled or lost games, or, you know, the offense has been floundering or whatever the case was. It almost always had to do with whatever Jacob Toppin was doing when he was engaged defensively, when he was looking to be a rim runner and playing above the rim and knocking down shots. And I mean, don't look now, but he's like shooting 40+% from three in SEC play, which is a huge development for a guy that had just simply refused to take them earlier on in the year. So it's little things like that that make you comfortable with, you know, Chris not needing to take a step up and be a 25-minute per game guy at the four. He can now be the complement to Jacob Toppin and play three real minutes of the three because he's also attacking the basket and, you know, doing different things that Chris wasn't doing earlier on in the year. So those, you needed to have somebody at the four step up, but also you needed his backup to step up because Damian Collins wasn't emerging as that guy. Lance Ware wasn't, obviously, you know, him and Oscar Tshiebwe weren't working together as at the four and five. That four piece was, I think, the biggest question mark all season long and a key to a lot of Kentucky's struggles. Now that Jacob has kind of embraced that and he's kind of thriving in that role, even if he's not scoring 20 and 15 a game, but if he's getting you 10 and 8 or 10 and 5 or 8 and 10 or whatever the case is, that's enough, especially with what Chris has given you as of late. I think that's plenty for this team to actually, you know, feel confident about his postseason chances.
I agree. And you're starting, like we talked, I know I talked about it in recent weeks, that you combine some of these guys into one role instead of individual roles. And what you're getting out of Chris and Jacob together is, I mean, it's difference making numbers, whether it be scoring points, rebounding from both of them, I think has been important, especially Chris. Like I feel like Chris can put that type of production on the glass almost every game if he wants to. And to me, it wasn't as much the defensive glass as it was the offensive glass. There were a couple of rebounds at times where he was soaring right there at the rim, and I know he drew a foul on one of them and got to the free throw line. So I think that is a way that he can impact the game as well. And, you know, Cal and these coaches are going to turn on that tape and show him, like, this is who you can be. Like, you can be this guy going and getting 6, 7, 8 rebounds a game if he's playing a lot of minutes. Jacob doing that. And Antonio Reeves, I thought, hit a big shot late when Tennessee was trying to make a run there. They ran some of that floppy action to him. I think at the time they called it two. It was two circle because he was running the two. But I thought he had a big shot. Obviously, I know he picked up some fouls there early in the first half, and that's what kind of forced John Calipari to play a little bit of different lineups. So I think over the course of the last couple of weeks, all of these guys have had a moment, right? Even Damian Collins has had his moment where he stepped in and came up with some big minutes late in games and when he's in spot minutes when he needed to play. I thought Lance did some things well Saturday and so in a limited role. So everyone's kind of chipping in right now. It's all hands on deck, and that's what it takes to get back on track, especially when you're playing shorthanded. And Kentucky's got a lot of guys doing a lot of good things. And are all of them going to play well every single night, Jack? No, they're not. But you don't have to, as long as you don't just have dead spots across your roster. You've got to have some guys playing well, especially your stars like Cason Wallace. If Cason's playing like that, Kentucky's going to have a chance to beat anyone. And the thing that you look around college basketball right now, tell me a team in college basketball that if Kentucky gets on a neutral floor, regardless of seeding, and they play well and its best players play well, do you think Kentucky cannot beat?
The only one that, I mean, everybody kind of fears right now is Alabama. Like, absolutely. Even Purdue has, who has the national player of the year in Zach Edey. And I do think that that matchup would be troublesome because I do think that Zach would get Oscar in pretty significant foul trouble pretty quickly. And that could be a huge mismatch in that regard. But Purdue doesn't scare me. And Alabama, the only reason why they scare me is, because they play a style of play that really hurts Kentucky. And they haven't shown that they could really – that they could really shut down, and especially with Oscar and his defensive struggles in that game especially. That was the worst we saw Oscar all season. So really that's the only team. But if you're looking for a positive of that, is that that's also a team that could go cold at any time. And, you know, if they're not making shots, they're beatable. They're vulnerable. And those teams don't usually make it in the NCAA tournament. So that's where my optimism comes from, is this is the lowest – overall feel that I've seen in a really long time. And if there was ever a time for an 8 seed or a 9 seed or whatever Kentucky's going to end up being to make a run, this is the season to do it, because there aren't any real juggernauts that you go, well, if Kentucky gets matched up against them, they're screwed.
Yeah, this is the year where you're not looking and saying, well, they're a 9, ooh, you got to beat a 1 the second game. You're looking, okay, let's just get in the tournament. Whether we're a 10, a 9, an 8, or a 7, it doesn't matter. Just make the field – and be playing your best basketball. But, you know, I threw out the question that which team kind of scares you away if Kentucky's playing well. And then, hold on, I thought I got kicked out for a second, but I'm back. Which, when you're talking about teams that you fear, there's really not one. But also, you can throw that on the other side of this and say, if Kentucky's not playing well, name a team that couldn't beat them. a lot can. So that's the thing. Like, you got to be playing well. If they're playing well, they're going to have a chance to beat anyone. If their dudes aren't playing well, it's going to be tough. Like, that's the margin for error is still thin. But this is still a team that I think that you don't want to see in your bracket if you're one of the bigger name teams in college basketball or you're one of those higher seeds. If you're looking up and Kentucky's a 7, you got them in the second game, regardless of where that game's being played at, you're probably thinking, man, that's not who you want to be dealing with the first week in the NCAA tournament. Kentucky still has a chance, and they still have 3 weeks to continue getting better and developing, adding to their resume, getting better as a team, working on some things. I'm a lot more optimistic today than what I was about 7 days ago. And we've also seen this thing shift. I don't want to come back here again on Wednesday and or Thursday or whatever day and say, okay, you wasted a good run and then you lose to someone, you lose to Florida. You want to keep building this.
Without
Colin Castleton. Don't give me a reason to go back down that rabbit hole and start saying, oh, man, I started to believe that they had turned it around, and then you get kicked back down a notch. This needs to be the last bump in the road was Georgia. They can still lose a game or two, but you can't play poorly and look the way they did that day. That has to be behind them. You can't do that again.
There were a couple questions on here about, you know, just what this team's ceiling is in terms of seeding. And I guess it's a good question for you. You got a quad one game in Gainesville on Wednesday, Saturday, quad one at home. It's right on the cusp of a quad one. So you kind of want Auburn to win all of the other games outside of, obviously, on Saturday to stick right in that top 30 line. They're sitting at number 30 right now. Vandy at home, which surprisingly, I wouldn't be shocked if so they're 88 right now on the net. They have to get to 75 to get that game on the road back on January 24th. If they can get up to 75, then that turns into a quad one on the road. I think it's probably unlikely, but that one's going to be close. And then you have quad one game in Fayetteville at Arkansas to close out the regular season. Say Kentucky continues this run. You believe John Calipari that, you know, we just had to get our feet underneath us and really get some momentum rolling. Say they finish this thing out and, you know, get to the championship game of the SEC tournament. What is this team's NCAA tournament, I guess, seeding ceiling?
So if they win out the regular season and then win out, is that winning the SEC tournament or getting to the finals? Yeah.
Well, I guess we've known that winning the whole thing doesn't really matter. So getting to the last day, I guess.
So that would mean 6 more wins because they would get a double bye in the SEC tournament, correct, if they went out. So
they'd win
Friday, Saturday. So there'd be 6 more wins. You would probably pick up quad one wins on a neutral floor by that point in the SEC tournament, unless there's some upsets along the way. I think your ceiling is probably sitting somewhere. I think you could climb it all the way to a five or six. I think that's somewhere in the ballpark of that. I don't know. I would say 6 to be safe. I think 5 would still be high just because they don't have anything to show for in the non-conference. But I think 6 would be a safe bet, as that's how high it could get.
Man, if you tell me that, considering where we were a week ago, that we could climb up to 7, the 7 range, where you knock off an 11 in the opening, or a 10 in the opening round, and then you get the 2 in the round of 32, right?
Yep. If
so, you get that, and then if you're telling me you can face off against a 2, which there are not any of the current seed lines, and none of the 2 scare me right now. So if you can tell me that you get that chance, path to a Sweet 16, I think 7's kind of that magic number right now. And, you know, Shoot, even if you're an 8 at that point, then you take on the 1 in the round of 32. And it's kind of like that, you know, 2014 year where you beat Wichita State in the round of 32. And then the path kind of sets up for you. But I think a 7 would be about as beautiful as you could ask for, considering where things were when we left Athens a week ago.
And I think a seven's in play, even if they lose a game somewhere here closing the regular season, if they do it in maybe a competitive fashion. Like, let's say that they lose on the road at Arkansas to close the regular season and they bounce back and play well in the SEC tournament. I think a seven's still in play. I honestly think they're going to be outside of the double-digit seed range if they win a couple of games this week. I don't think they'll fall back to anywhere near a 10 or 11 if they beat Florida and they beat Auburn at Rupp Arena, and then they get Vandy at Rupp. So then you're talking about a winning streak here with a lot of quad one wins mixed in there. So then the committee doesn't take into account, it doesn't look at Kentucky early in the season. It looks at what Kentucky has been late in the season in a league that has presented a lot of quad one opportunities. So then Kentucky's playing well in SEC play. And I think that kind of puts Kentucky in that ballpark of being a seven, most likely being a seven or eight. If they win out, then I do think a six is probably where it's capped, unless a lot shakes out and you see some teams fall off that seed line, maybe lose early in their conference tournament. Kentucky's still playing in their conference tournament, racking up quad ones, maybe a five, but I would say a six is probably where it is the highest it can get. But I'm starting to think that a seven or eight is most likely where they'll fall if they play well down the stretch.
Yeah, and you know, Arkansas, that game is obviously one that we've had circled on our calendars from the very beginning, thinking, oh man, that trip to Fayetteville is going to be difficult playing against really talented freshmen. Nick Smith returning to that lineup has kind of thrown them out of whack a little bit. And, you know, he has not been – so the beauty of Nick Smith was that he was one of the best just go-get-you-a-bucket guys. And those guys always perform extremely well in March. But the issue with him is he is unbelievably poor tunnel vision. And at times he kind of shoots his teams out of, you know, kind of like the Archie Goodwin syndrome, where he does a lot of really good things. But in crucial moments, he kind of gets that tunnel vision and turns the ball over, takes bad shots, or drives in and just jacks stuff up, hoping for the best, hoping to draw a foul or whatever, and he doesn't get it. And that's kind of the downfall of Nick Smith. And if you take the ball, you know, put the ball in his hands and take it out of Anthony Black or Ricky Council or, you know, what some of their other standouts, then it kind of makes them a little bit more vulnerable as well. So that's a team that I'm keeping a close eye on, how they close out the regular season. They've been okay, not great since his return. Lost against Mississippi State at Texas A&M, and then beat Florida. And in that game against Florida, he only went 10 points, 33% shooting in 32 minutes. So how they close out the regular season, I think, will be huge. And I'm kind of excited to see how that matchup is going to be with Kentucky and kind of those. You know, I think the last game against Arkansas, all of the freshmen played really, really well. Their Burger Boys played really well, and Kentucky's Burger Boys played really well. So seeing how that dynamic shifts with another one being added to the fold in Nick Smith, that's definitely one that I have my eyes on.
Yeah, and that's a game that when the schedule was released that we kind of circled and said could determine the league champion early in the season. And we looked at it as two possible Final Four teams and playing in the final Saturday of the season in Fayetteville going into the SEC tournament. I mean, Kentucky's got some exciting games coming up here down the stretch. A big one coming up against Florida that you want to continue taking steps in the right direction. You want to win one here on the road against a quality opponent and get another win and just keep winning. Just keep winning and keep racking up wins as you head towards March. And it's hard to believe we're already at this point in the season where bubble talk is at an all-time high for the season, and you're finally starting to pay attention to who's in and who's out. It didn't matter 6 weeks ago who Joe Lunardi had in that first four out or last four in, but now it matters, and every single night impacts that. Games tonight impact it. Games tomorrow night impact it. And that's when it's the fun time of year, and Kentucky is finally on the right side of that NCAA tournament bubble, Jack, and I know that's something that a week and a half ago we were kind of wondering, are they even going to be in that last four in or first four out graphic? If they lose another game, they could have been a significant hole trying to play its way out of. But credit to them, they got it together. Picked up a much-needed win on the road at Mississippi State, followed it with an even more impressive win against Tennessee at Rupp, and the Cats are playing well right now and at the perfect time.
Answer a couple of questions from the feed. You guys, there are a ton of them in there. The last couple shows that we've done, the feedback has just been unreal as it's gone on. So keep those coming. We'll try to answer as many as we can before the show runs out. Of course, I just had it. I was scrolling through all of them. But they brought up the possibility of just how much – yeah, KYCats06 says – how much better realistically can Livingston get? Sean, I think that's a really good question, because he does kind of seem like a high floor, low ceiling kind of guy. But he has progressed so well that I'm curious what you think his ceiling is to close out the regular season and going into postseason.
Oh, man. If he rebounds the way that he did against Tennessee, then I think that his impact is significant. Just given his frame and the position he plays on the floor, some versatility there to play the three, to play the four, and get to the free throw line with that body, but make free throws when you get there. Like, I think that there's still a lot of room for growth in his game over the course of the next 4 weeks or 5 weeks, however long Kentucky's playing basketball, hopefully all the way into April. But I still think that there's a lot of growth that he can add to his game. But I'm looking for consistency from him. And it's honestly, it's an E word. It's energy and effort. If he's given energy and effort, whether he has the ball or he doesn't have the ball, defending, hitting the glass, then I think that you're going to have him on the floor for a significant amount of time for each and every game, just because I think his potential and his upside is higher than some of the other guys on this roster. And his impact Saturday, I thought, was one of the biggest differences and one of the biggest reasons Kentucky was able to have that cushion against Tennessee the entire time.
And a big part of it isn't, we talked to Oscar Tshiebwe after the win, and he brought up just kind of how teams are playing him right now and just going two, three bodies on, especially a team like Tennessee. They do play so physical and they are so big bodied. And, you know, that they tried to take Oscar out of the game as much as possible with Juroš Plavšić. And because of that, and Oscar brought up, said, you know, they were having two, three bodies on me at all times. And I accepted that because I knew that if I had two or three guys on me at once, there's an open lane to the basket that nobody else is accounting for right now. And that's where Chris Livingston thrived the most, either attacking the basket, finding mismatches with guards, you know, posting guards up. Kaysen had a couple post-up opportunities because of the space that Oscar was creating elsewhere. But really just the putbacks that Chris was able to get, that was entirely because of the energy that they were focusing in on Oscar. If teams continue to try to take Oscar out of the games, and that's, we've seen that a lot this year, Chris has to be that guy. And I think that's, again, we were missing that four spot while they were taking Oscar out of the game. We weren't getting the production, the consistency out of that four spot to really kind of muck everything else up around it. And now that Chris has kind of emerged as that kind of energy guy, I'm going to go give you an offensive rebound. I'm going to be the cleanup specialist. I think that's going to force them to kind of account more for Chris and, you know, open up opportunities for more one-on-ones with Oscar and let him eat in the way that he was. And I think it's going to be a lot, you know, a lot more complimentary basketball because of it. So that's what I'm leaning on with Chris. Just keep attacking that and forcing them to counter you, unlike we saw from him, I guess, even just – 2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I agree with you. And honestly, I think the four spot on this roster should be one of the most consistent spots. Just be given Oscar's going to require so much attention. And we know that Oscar's numbers and his production, and he's not had the crazy games like he had a year ago consistently. Like, we know that he's had great games, but he's also had moments where he struggled. And that's because there's a full season of scouting reports and everything. And every coach talks before they play Kentucky. Hey, what did you do to negate some of the things he does? What did you do? And we all know that is Kentucky's scouts are geared toward keeping Oscar in check. When it comes to the backcourt and the shooting's not going to be there every single night, but I think the production from the four should be one of the most consistent things about Kentucky's roster, because it's kind of the free most spot on the floor. You rebound and you defend and you make high energy plays, which is dunks like Jacob Toppin did Saturday, offensive rebounding, getting to the free throw line. Those are the easy areas to make an impact in the game of basketball, because they're all tied to effort. And that's why I think that those two guys, if they commit to that and they defend and they rebound and they run, I think Jacob Toppin and Chris Livingston could be the key to what Kentucky does in the NCAA tournament. If you get good production from the four spot, you got to have great guard play. And Kentucky has a guy that they can lean on in the backcourt. And I want to see Kaysen now play six really solid basketball games in a row. I know he didn't play well at Georgia, didn't get a bucket till late in the game. Good game, Mississippi State. Great game against Tennessee, especially first half. Keep it going. Play some really good basketball here. These last four, put six really good games together going into the SEC tournament from your point guard spot. Then you're feeling really good about your guards. But I want to see this four spot continue to be a combined effort. Three and four spot, whoever it is. Put them together, combine them. Look at their numbers, rebounds, points, and let's see. And you need a double-double from those guys every single night combined.
Martin Robert asks, James, can we find rim protection? I guess at this point in the year, is that even something that we can rely on, or is it could just kind of, it is what it is at this point, and you have to hope that everything else works around that to not make that such a significant issue as it has been at times, unfortunately, this season?
I honestly don't know if you can find it. I think it's more so you find a way to negate it. If it's, you know what I'm saying? Like rebound, defensive rebound. Don't give up second chance opportunities, because if you're, I mean, that's where it's going to hurt you, I think, especially you defend the 3-point line. There's other areas. Kentucky needs to continue to get better in pick and roll and ball screen coverage down the stretch here and what they're wanting to do defensively. I think this isn't going to be a team that I think that's going to get affect a lot of shots at the rim. And we know that that's not Oscar's thing. But what you do is you need to limit teams to one shot and done. And if Kentucky becomes an elite defensive rebounding team, then I don't think the need for rim protection is really there. I don't think that it's as much a requirement what you need. So I think become an elite defensive rebounding team, you got one of the best rebounders in college basketball history down there. You got Chris and Jacob chipping in, doing their things. Let these guards, Kaysen rebounds. I think you had 6 the other day in the win against Tennessee and 6 assists. So you make that a total team effort on the defensive glass, and I think you can kind of negate some of the need for rim protection if you just limit teams to one shot and done and no second chance opportunities. And then hit your free throws. It's another area. You get to the free throw line, hit them. They had a really good stretch there, and then they went really cold at the free throw line late. So you hit the free throws and be an elite rebounding team. And I just continue just to get better on the defensive end. The offensive efficiency is there. Mm-hmm. Just now the defensive efficiency needs to come along. The offense is no longer an issue. Like, they're scoring points and they're efficient and they're doing things.
I think offensively, Kentucky is now 17 in the country in adjusted offense, which we've talked in the past. Top 20 is kind of that magic line that you're looking for in terms of efficiency, offensive and defensive efficiency. They're not close defensive, unfortunately. They are, I believe, of course, now it just, I pulled up the 2002 stats. And in case you were curious, Kentucky was 22nd defensively that year. So, but definitely not this. This season, Kentucky is 87 in adjusted defense. So that needs to get better. It's not going to get up to top 20, but you got to get growth in that area. I think it was definitely a step in the right direction. Kentucky had a defensive clinic in the first half against Tennessee, holding the Volunteers to 25.9% shooting overall, 7.7% from 3. And then they go 4-for-8 from the line, really just take them out of the game completely. I guess, Sean, to close out the year, how do you emulate what worked in the first half, especially against Tennessee, and take out the Santiago Viscovi, lightning rod for first 8 minutes of that, and then the last 12 was solid. How do you get the last 12 minutes of the game and the first 20 minutes of the game?
Attention to detail, I think, is make a consistent effort to do whatever it takes as a team to defend at the highest level. And that all comes down to scouting report. And we know that every single opponent changes your ball screen coverage, the way that you do things, whether you're going under screens on certain guys, going over screens, if you're jump switching things, if you're fronting the post, if you're 3-quarter, it all depends on the scout. And I think that this is a team that's full of veteran players that have played a lot of college basketball. And you have an on-ball defender in Kaysen Wallace that can create a lot of havoc. And you've got some guys that are capable defenders. I think, honestly, it's just an attention to detail thing. If they commit to that end of the floor and come together as a team and do it, then I think that this is a team that you can throw out the KenPom number maybe at some point and just put a stretch of really good defensive numbers together. Like, whatever KenPom is here going into the SEC tournament, we did this a year ago, right? We talked about how efficient they were offensively and other things, and then they looked ugh when they played St. Peter's in some games late in the season. Yeah. So then those numbers didn't add up when you looked at them. Make kind of flip that and just be playing good defensive basketball and kind of look at their efficiency in a shorter sample. Like their offensive efficiency right now over the last, so many games is, I think, 7th in offensive efficiency since the loss to South Carolina. So instead of 17th, it's 7th since that. So let's look at those numbers in a smaller sample size and let's see how Kentucky's defending over the stretch of play for the next 4 or 5 games. That's what I'm wanting to see, some improvement, and where are they in that short span of a couple of weeks, because the overall number is not going to be pleasing to us when it comes to making a run in the NCAA tournament.
A couple questions about Damian Collins, and I guess so. There are a couple questions. John P. Ryan says, anything new with Reeves and Collins' decisions for next year? And then a couple people asked about why Onyenso hasn't played, and if Damian can be that guy. So I guess you answer the question first about if there's any role for Damian and or Ugana to close out the regular season, and then I'll address the whether they come Antonio and. I guess Damian stay or go decision.
I feel Damian has a role. I don't know if it's a significant role, but I feel like, and he went in the other day and made a beautiful pass and then had great energy after he made the pass. He was fired up about it. And we've seen him go in and spot minutes and play well and hit free throws and get a couple of rebounds and run to the rim and get a dunk or something like that, or a highlight play. He feels like a guy to me that could go a game and give you 9 to 10 minutes, and they could go another game and maybe play 2 minutes. But that's still a role, depending on foul trouble and situational basketball and what you're looking for, depending on who you're playing against. Like if Kentucky plays Alabama again, you've got to play Damian Collins. Like I just think that he fits that game better than Oscar Tshiebwe does at times. Now, we know Oscar is going to be on the floor if they play Alabama again, but games like situations like that, I feel like there's a role for him. I don't know as much about Onyenso. I feel like Damian's probably the safer pick if Kentucky needs something in a 2 or 3 minute window, or a Lance Ware in a 2 or 3 minute window or stretch there. So I do think that there's some guys. Look at Adu Thierro. Like his role has been kind of all over the place this year. It's been as needed when Kentucky was thin on the road at Tennessee. He played some important minutes against Tennessee at Rupp Arena, played some important minutes. So I think those guys have roles. They don't have to make massive impacts. They just have to be stable pieces that kind of hold the fort down and get Kentucky to situations where they can survive a stretch of play without whoever's out and they're having to be in. I think that's the role that Damian could play.
I guess to answer the other side of that about stay or go decisions, I think Damian has one of the most interesting decisions to make this offseason, because – when you lose, when you're in his position and lose somebody like your dad, at some point, the people that you're around at that moment become your family and become, you know, John Calipari becomes your father figure and all of the teammates become your brothers and kind of they are the reasons why, you know, pulling you through the darkest time of your life. So some people kind of shell up and they say, yeah, I need to get back home and be with my sisters and be with my mom and take care of them. But some people kind of use the family support that they have in Lexington. And that's what I've heard has been the case, that, you know, Damian was in a really, really, really dark place, the darkest place you could possibly be in at that time. And the teammates around him have really rallied around him and have kind of put him in position to, you know, confidently take steps forward. And even though the production kind of took a hit and stalled out a little bit because of obvious reasons, when something like that happens to you, everything is thrown out the door, and whatever you can get out of him at that point moving forward is it's all gravy. And I think that's where things are right now, that he's in a really safe spot around people that he cares about and a family-like atmosphere. So I think at the time I was absolutely convinced that it was a done deal that he was going to leave this offseason, that he was just going to get home and be with family and be around his support system back home. But I think he has really found a family support system down here that leads me to believe that I think a possibility of returning is definitely a lot more on the table than I was expecting. So I still think it's going to be kind of one of those game time decisions when the offseason rolls around and he is back around his family back home, if he thinks that he needs to be home for them. But he isn't itching to get home, I guess is the best way to put it, which is a great thing, because mentally he just needs to be where he is and where he's most comfortable. And he is very comfortable right now and definitely in a better spot than he was to start the year. So long story short, still definitely very much 50-50 with him, but a lot of progress is been made that possibility is a lot more on the table than it was. I mean, certainly back in November and December. Antonio Reeves, Kentucky is going to actively recruit him and recruit him very, very hard to come back. He came in on a 2-year plan, but then I think exceeded his own expectations when he got here. And does that kind of change things on his own end where, you know, he kind of thought, well, if I can do this at this level and I'm dominating in practices and in pickup scrimmages against these guys and, you know, play as well as he did in the Bahamas, then maybe I can do it in the league. So I think now it's going to be about kind of finding that middle ground with him and saying, there's a lot for you to work on. There's a lot for you to get better with. You know, he isn't a polished product. He's not a perfect product right now, but he still is unbelievably productive, and his floor is very, very high as a scorer. And I think recruiting him back to Kentucky is going to be a huge priority for this team. But I guess, Sean, my next question for you is, how do you see him if he does make the decision to come back, which I know that it's probably close to 50-50, but I think Kentucky's going to ultimately talk him into it. What do you think the impact could be on him on next season's team, knowing that you have DJ Wagner, Rob Dillingham, Justin Edwards, the, you know, Reed Shepard, the other guards that they have coming in?
Well, I think that's the biggest question, right, is I think Antonio's got to see a fit and a role that where he can step in and provide an impact on next year's roster, because there's a lot of talented guys coming in that we know are going to get minutes. But if you get that guy back and then, what, you know, CJ Frederick, like there's multiple decisions here that can kind of impact where Kentucky's at next year. And we know that Rob Dillingham and DJ Wagner, Justin Edwards are going to be three guys that are going to play a lot of minutes on next year's Kentucky team. And I think Reed Shepard could play his way into some significant minutes again or next season as well. So that's going to be the key. But if Antonio does come back, it gives Kentucky another scorer, a guy that's in the program and been in the program for a full season and had some success. And I want to see how this thing closes out. What's the run that Reeves goes on? Does he hit big shots for Kentucky in postseason play? There's some important stay or go decisions that not just for guys within key roles right now, but some rotational pieces for next year's roster that could really add to what Kentucky could be a year from now. And I think Reeves is one of those most important pieces that could be a key component to what Kentucky does rotation wise, especially in the backcourt. So I'd love to see him back.
And I do think that's a great point, because it is such an up in the air thing, especially considering the trajectory of this season, where things were a month ago, where things were a week ago, where things are now, how things could be in the last four regular season games, SEC tournament, March Madness. If Chris Livingston averages 15-8 to close out the regular season and explodes in March, then that guy's going pro. Like, he came in wanting to go pro after a year. He will go pro. So,
and if he does that, Kentucky's probably making a run the NCAA tournament, most likely.
Yeah. So that's important to keep in mind. If Antonio Reeves improves, there's a lot of talk about his defense, and I'll ask you that, where his defensive struggles have come from. Is that kind of a mentality thing, or is it a physical thing that he just has those limitations defensively? Real quick on that, but if Antonio Reeves explodes in March Madness, he kind of becomes a guy who goes hot for 25, 27, 28 in a tournament game, maybe he becomes a guy that NBA teams go, what can he be for us in a kind of a bench role? Michael Mulder was on an NBA roster for some time. And, you know, guys like that, they find their footing in the league. If you can just be a spark plug kind of energy,
you can make shots. Score,
if you can be a microwave scorer off the bench, you have a role. And so that's definitely something to keep in mind. But I guess the defensive struggles, where do you think those come from with him?
And defensively, too, I think a lot of it has been in the past, is Antonio Reeves ever been called upon to have to defend at a high level? We know it, you know, at Illinois State, it was score the ball, score the ball, score the ball. You weren't taking that dude off the floor. If he was getting beat defensively, you couldn't. Like, that was your microwave guy, that was your scorer. So I think a lot of it does come down to attention to detail and consistency and being called upon to have to defend for 40 minutes. If you play 28 minutes, you better defend for all 28 of them, or you're not going to play for John Calipari. He's going to have you on the bench, and somebody else is going to be in there in that spot. So I think some of that is just, I mean, you have to do so much more as a player at a place like Kentucky than you do at some other places. And that's no knock on, you know, smaller programs or mid-majors or anything like it. But that player that is scoring a ton of points at a mid-major school, you are keeping them on the floor regardless of what they are on the defensive end of the floor. You get to a place like Kentucky, if you can't defend in the SEC or you can't defend in the ACC consistently every single night, then you have a weak spot and every single coach knows it and they're going to attack it. And look, Reeves isn't putting up 20-21 points like he did to Illinois State. He's still having big games and big moments, but it's not enough to overcome some defensive struggles. So then you see Cal kind of look elsewhere and do some different things. So I think a lot of it is just you're asked to do more at a place like Kentucky, and I think that's a hard thing to get adjusted to. I think that's one of the biggest things from the transfer portal is guys just – it's just a different level when you move up from mid-major or so to the SEC or the ACC or the Big 12. It's just different every single night. And you go from scoring 20 points a game to maybe 9 or 10. You have to do some other things to keep you on the floor for extended minutes too.
John P. Ryan asked, what role would Collins have with Bradshaw and Ugonna coming back? It's a great question. There were a couple other questions about what Oscar has to do. And if Connor Riggs says, if Oscar wants to return, do you think Cal tries to convince him to go pro or will he accept him back? It can make for the big man room really crowded. Look, there are a lot of paths to this to make this a really, really crowded roster where attrition will have to happen somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think that's it made a lot of sense to talk at the time when Chris Livingston was struggling the way he was, and you know the transfer rumors came out. It almost like accounted for, okay, well, there's where one of those bodies were going to come from. And with Damian Collins, you know, him being up in the air is like, okay, well, that's obviously going to be a body and something to keep in mind as well. Now it's kind of something to think about when things are getting better in those areas and the possibility of them returning gets higher. I guess that does lead to questions of, there are only 13 scholarships on the team and only so many rotation guys that John Calipari is willing to play. At some point, the bodies have to come from somewhere and the minutes have to come from somewhere. Who does leave at that point? And I think it is something to keep an eye on how CJ returns this season. I was always told that he has 2 years left if he applies for that medical redshirt. He could come back for two more seasons, but his injuries have gone, Sean. If he comes back the rest of the regular season and God forbid something happens with him or, he just doesn't find his footing or whatever. And, you know, there could come a decision for him where he goes, you know, is this even worth it for me to come back and stay hurt? That is something to keep an eye on. As of right now, I think he does come back for another year because I'm also assuming that he comes back healthy and has a good march and, you know, we could kind of get to see him be the best version of him. But it is something to keep an eye on. I do think that at some point something's got to give and attrition will come from somewhere. Where do those bodies come from? I definitely think Oscar will be one of those guys. Some people were talking about the possibility of him coming back. I don't think he comes back. But where do you see that attrition coming from?
Man, that's a really good question. It has to happen, right? I mean, there's, like you said, it has to happen. You're going to have some guys that are going to transfer. You're going to have some guys that are obviously going to make decisions to not come back and pursue a professional career. I don't know, Jack. It's the key decisions like a Chris Livingston, I think, is where you kind of you look at and see, because I think that one of the biggest – storylines for when we get into April is if Chris is on the verge of that stay or go decision, getting him back to go with the pieces that Kentucky has coming in next year. He has a significant role as a star on next year's Kentucky team. And I think that's a selling point that John Calipari and the staff will make to him. You know, Kaysen's going to go, he's out the door. I think we're to a point with Oscar. I feel like that Oscar is probably more likely to go than to come back. And I guess maybe I'll be wrong there, but I guess that would just be my opinion. I mean, he was the reigning national player of the year. He's not going to be the national player of the year in college basketball this year. Like, what more can Oscar Tshiebwe do for his game and stuff with another year at Kentucky? But I think that the Reeves decision and the Livingston decision are the two that I'm paying the most attention to, because if those two come back, then I feel like it's going to force some other guys to kind of have some tough decisions to make on where they stand, like a Damian Collins or a Lance Ware or whoever at that spot, a CJ Frederick. I think those are the two that I'm looking at that could swing it, because those two would significantly have significant roles and play a lot of minutes on next year's team, where I think that the other guys that are already kind of behind those guys and the talent coming in, we know that those young pieces are going to play a lot of minutes next year on that roster.
Yeah. You know, if Collins
it's
does.
It's a complicated discussion right now because we have no idea. Like, I could see it going four or five different ways, honestly.
I do know that's.
And Antonio on the roster together, or I could see one of them.
And I could see them both leaving. If things go well for, you know, if things go well for Antonio and things don't go well for CJ, it could be one of those deals where Antonio feels the need to go pro and CJ feels the need to hang it up. Like, it's just a really tough dynamic that I know that the Kentucky staff, it's something that they are keeping an eye on. Like, they know that something's got to give with some of these key pieces and some key decisions, because of course, ideally you get Antonio and CJ back next year alongside Rob and DJ, because how exciting would that be to have two vet scorers, two vet shooters alongside two electric five-star guards? Like, that's what you dream of. That's what the hope is. And then how dope would it be to have Chris Livingston playing alongside Justin Edwards and those two feeding off of each other, and, you know, Aaron Bradshaw feeding off of, you know, Damian Collins and Ugo, like those three together. But at some point, these guys want to play basketball. These guys want minutes and their own touches and opportunities. And at some point, something's got to give. So I think it's just way too early. These next four games, however the SEC tournament goes, then obviously how March Madness goes. I mean, we could see four or five decisions changed as a result of these next 10 games.
And technically, Xavier Wheeler has a year, right?
He does.
But that's probably not going to happen. And that's the most likely not going to be on next year's roster, in my opinion, when it comes to backcourt pieces, other than Cason Wallace. But it should be noted that he does still have a year if he chooses with the COVID year. So, I mean, there will be a lot of dominoes to fall. You got a lot of talent coming in, and I know that it is the top class, but it's not of the classes of the John Walls or the Anthony Davis classes. Like, it has a number one bite, and people are going to look at that and think it's like instant Final Four and national championship run. But it's the decisions that follow those guys coming in are more important than I think what's coming in. Who you add to what's coming in could make the difference in that class pursuing a national championship, whether hopefully a 10th, because hopefully you get number 9 this season. But I think the dominoes that follow the incoming freshmen are what will make Kentucky a contender or not a year from now, is what happens with Reeves, what happens with, you know, other pieces, Chris Livingston. Those are the guys that I think are more important. You've already got these guys secured, and it becomes recruiting the guys that you need back and you want back, honestly. You want some attrition. That's part of the game. That's part of that at every program. The NBA, you see it. College basketball, you see it. You see it at every sport. Attrition happens every offseason, and it will happen at Kentucky just the way it always does.
Yeah, Connor Riggs says, doesn't sound like Cal will have to do much through the transfer portal for next year's roster then. Yeah, I completely agree. I think there's a scenario where Kentucky doesn't add a single player the core pieces that we have right now. I think that's actually more likely than not.
The only way that they do, I think, is if you lose a Reeves and a Frederick and you just want to go get a shooter.
Right.
I think that's the most likely piece there. Or if you lose one of those multiple front court pieces and you want to add a stretch four or a five. You just want to add some depth to go with, you know, with Bradshaw and Ugana. Like, you want to look and see what you've got there. But if you got Damian Collins, then you probably don't add anything to the interior. And then you've already got Justin Edwards and others. So I think it's almost by – if they add anyone, it is a guy that excels at one thing, and it's one thing that you need, whether it's rim protection or if it's rebounding or if it's just a bench player or a shooter. And shooter's probably what you need. That's probably where you go.
Ben from Kentucky says, Cal will start DJ, Livingston, Edwards, Ugana, and Bradshaw. Cal going big next year. That would be terrible. That would be just an absolutely terrible thing to unfold. I hope not. But it does. And Dave, a couple up, says, we are talking about another super team. We are blessed to even be having this conversation. If Cal plays his cards right, we could be in that conversation. And that's what's kind of so exciting about this team playing where it needs to right now and kind of finding its groove at the right time. While also, it's kind of a best case scenario where the guys that you thought were going to be surefire, you know, draft picks to start the year, they've kind of underwhelmed a little bit and have at least been in the, you know, like Damian Collins, we went into this year saying, well, it's a guarantee he's going to be a lottery pick. The way he was playing in the Bahamas, pro day, some of those things, he looked like a clear lottery pick. Then what happened to him is very unfortunate and terrible. But it's also kind of created yet another like path for him to potentially come back. And, you know, Chris Livingston has struggled all year long, and, you know, the possibility of him hitting the portal was so high. And then now that he's just starting to find his groove, but maybe not good enough to be a lottery pick, but maybe in that conversation of where he does come back and play himself into lottery status, you're kind of putting yourself in a real position where you kind of can have your cake and eat it too, where the team is playing where it needs to close out the year, but also not elite enough for, you know, individual draft talent to where they potentially come back next year and you could have kind of run things back next year as well. So it could be a really interesting scenario that I'm very much excited for.
The freshmen alone to me aren't enough for Kentucky to just be a national championship team next year. You need those role pieces and those contributors and the guys behind them. And I think that's where the most important roster development happens in May and April, is who do you add to the guys coming in? The guys coming in are great players. I mean, and we talk about the depth of talent in high school and how you compare it from 1 year to the next. Here's the thing about it. Every single program in college basketball is competing and taking from the same pool of talent. And Kentucky got the best from that pool. So just because there's not a John Wall or an Anthony Davis or a Karl Anthony Towns or whoever at the top of that class, that there's still really good players there. And Kentucky got the best of the best, where other programs didn't. But I still think that those two or three decisions, and I'll say two, that follow and add the depth to the roster, that's where Kentucky separates itself here in about a month and a half, 2 months, whenever those decisions start to pile up.
Yeah, a couple of people asked about Lance. FT says, is Lance coming back since we're looking at this? If you have Damian, Ugo, Aaron Bradshaw, all three back, with Justin Edwards being a small ball four potential guy, if Chris Livingston decides to come back and he kind of owns that four spot playing alongside Justin Edwards at the three or vice versa, I mean, at that point, Lance probably wants to play with, you know, DJ, a guy that he kind of ended his high school career with. How cool would it be for him to end his college career with? That would be a really cool storyline. And I'm sure, you know, the friendships are there and the connection is there. But that, you know, that's a tough decision for him too. Like, do you want to come back and knowingly play almost no time on the floor when you're a senior? Like, this is your last chance, your last hurrah at playing college basketball. Is that really how you want to end things? I mean, it's a tough decision. I think the expectation, I would probably lean more Damian goes and Lance comes back just for those reasons. But still, the fact that we're even having these conversations is, you know, something to just keep in mind, because it's not a done deal either way. And there is so much time for things to swing one way or the other, these last to close out the regular season going into postseason. So we'll see. It's going to be a tough conversation and a tough.
It is.
But kind of, I think, a fruitful conversation and probably a lot of rewards that could come with it, because it could set up a really impressive team next year that I think it's kind of going to be the dream for all Kentucky fans. You get the five-star All-Americans kind of front-loading the roster, but also have the core veterans to kind of back things up.
This has been a long process, but you're moving on from the portal with this exodus coming off this roster. You had to have the portal to hold the program together, honestly, and kind of steady it given off the 9-16 season. Like, there was no option. There wasn't anything that they got Ty Washington late from high school route, but you had to go portal. I think that stretch is done here in about a month, and you won't see Kentucky live and die with the portal anymore under John Calipari. I think it'll always be the high school route, and the portal will be as needed, and you won't see a point guard, a center, bench players, shooters, everything added from the portal the way Kentucky had to piece this roster together. I think those days are done. I think that was a short window just to kind of survive and get the program back to what it was doing with getting the best of the best from the high school route, and Kentucky did that. Kind of bridging the gap.
Well, Sean, I think we answered like 800 questions on 9,000 comments on here. This is unbelievable feedback. Appreciate all the people who reached out and asked questions. Make sure you keep doing that. Every week, we always have a blast doing that. So appreciate all the good feedback. It was a great show. With that, we keep talking about the SEC tournament and how much things can change and the dynamic of the rest of the season and where this team can be in March. It all starts in Nashville. And because of that, let's go on and have a message from our friends at Sumner County Tourism. Kentucky fans, we know you will be making your way to Nashville for the SEC tournament. We say welcome back. Experience beautiful Sumner County, Tennessee. Just minutes from Nashville, discover our storied history and strong country music heritage. Indulge in our delicious dining options. Relax in the simplicity of our lakes, parks, and farms. Connect with the authenticity of Sumner County, Tennessee. Head to visit sumnertn.com to learn more. Sean, great show. Appreciate you jumping on with me and breaking things down. It's better to break things down positively and have good things to talk about instead of how things were leaving Athens. So glad to have you on in a positive show.
Yeah, absolutely. It feels good to be back and talking about Kentucky winning basketball games. And hopefully we talk about a lot more wins over the next couple of weeks and then get to Nashville and start talking about an NCAA tournament run.
Love, can't wait for that. And love it. Before we get out here, where can fans find your work?
You can find my work at gobigbluecountry.com and you can follow me on Twitter at GBBCountry.
Find me on Twitter as well at Jack Pilgrim KSR. Reach out to me via email, jpilgrim@KentuckySportsRadio.com. That will be back next time for the Jam Packed Sources Today podcast. We will see you then.